Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. I have a great show lined up for you. My guest will be Acharya Shunya, and she is the author of Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, a complete prescription to optimize your health, prevent disease, and live with vitality and joy. And I'm really excited to have her on. I'll be telling you more about her later in the show when she joins us. But first, I want to go over some things going on in and around the city, some things that are in the news, and just, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So lots of things going on. I had a busy week this week. I hosted some Girl Scouts here last week on Friday. And, you know, so much of my work is cooking for people who have food allergies or they're, you know, they have cancer or not well. And I'm, you know, working with them, preparing food to help support their immune system. And yet when I get a group of young people who are not sick yet, hopefully won't be sick, but be able to influence how they eat going forward as they grow up, it's really exciting. And the Girl Scouts are studying eating for health and beauty. And so it was just a perfect time for them to come into my kitchen. And I taught them all how to make vegetarian sushi rolls and a tofu stir fry. And for most of them, it was their first time ever having tofu. Many of them have had sushi before, but certainly not my vegetarian ones. And we made some sesame rice noodles. And then we also made a delicious vegan raspberry Linzer tart, you know, and these cookies are so easy to whip up, and I make them all the time. And it was really wonderful for the girls to know that you could have a really great cookie without sugar, without any artificial coloring, without any preservatives. And we all had a really good time. So I love doing that, and it's just, you know, it just makes me realize why I'm doing what I'm doing, because when you can influence people and help them when they're young, before disease sets in, it's just really a wonderful thing. So I was really happy to do that. I also joined fellow Long Islanders this past Tuesday at a Resist Tuesday demonstration in front of Senator Schumer and Gillibrand's office. And, you know, I stood there with my signs during lunchtime while all the cars passed by and honked. And, you know, I think we all just need to take to the streets. And as much as I had other things to do, I just felt like it was important to carve out this little bit of time to show my support for the Environmental Protection Agency and for the Endowment of the Arts and so many other, you know, food justice, Medicaid, welfare, all the different organizations and agencies that the Trump budget is looking to cut. And so you will be hearing lots of dates of times when you can take action and join people on the streets, in marches, write letters, call your representatives and your senators. And we just all need to come together. And that is the only silver lining here with the new administration, is that hopefully it is bringing all the grassroots movements together under one roof with one mission, and that is to save our democracy. And that's really, you know, so vitally important. So we need everybody to participate, because the billionaires surrounding this administration have the money. What they don't have is the numbers of people, and we have to show them that we have the numbers of people. The power of the people is what's going to make the difference here. We cannot compete with the amount of money in that administration. So we really just have to compete with the numbers and let our representatives know that their constituents are a powerful force. And if they want to be reelected, they need to support what we want. So with that in mind, I really hope all of you, you know, check out my website, check out ways that you can take action, how you can get involved, sign up for organizations that you like and support them. You know, one of the corporations that the administration really supports is Monsanto, which most of us that are listening to this show probably already know what a bad organization they are, or company, I should say. And last week, a report came out in the New York Times that a former EPA official actually assisted Monsanto in covering up a toxicology report that showed Roundup, Monsanto's weed killer, was not only harmful for the environment, but cancer-causing. And that has, this has been known, it's been studied, you know, many times, but somehow these reports keep getting pushed under the rug, and safety reports are what makes to the news. And we need to stop that right now in its tracks and get Roundup off the market and really come together. I mean, the, you know, the United Nations World Health Organization, they have said that Roundup is bad. They have said that pesticides and GMOs are bad. And yet that's not what we, put out there. And people really think that you need these pesticides and herbicides in order to feed the world, and that's just not true. So please, you know, again, sign the petitions and participate in people power. That's what I want to tell you to do. Participate in the people power. Lots of things going on in and around the news. This weekend, March 25th, Homecoming Farm, which is a program of the Sisters of St. Dominic of Amityville. They're having their sixth annual Spring Awakening. And this year they have a great keynote speaker, Suzanne Colas. She's the founder and director of Water Spirit. And the theme is Water is Life, Understanding the Challenges We Face Locally and Globally, Protecting the Sacred Gift. And she will be speaking, as well as Adrian Esposito from Citizens Campaign. So that's this weekend. In Amityville, I believe there's still tickets, so you can go onto their website to find it. I have links for all of these things actually on my website at ieatgreen.com if you just want to go to one place. Also this weekend, Saturday, March 25th, is the 33rd annual Green Thumb Grow Together Conference. And this is a great event. It takes place at a community garden up in the Bronx called Hostos. Oh, actually, it's at Hostos Community College, I'm sorry, on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx. But this is a great, great conference. Lots of farmers and workshops will be going on, lots of speakers, kids' activities. So if you are interested, check that out. There's also a workshop for vets to grow vegetables in high tunnels, a little bit out of our area. It's up near Binghamton. But if you are a vet and you want to learn to grow vegetables in high tunnels, this event is for you. Also, March 27th, Feeding New York City by Reducing Restaurant Food Waste. This is a great event as well. This is going to be talking about food waste, but not just for restaurants. It can also help individuals in how to cut their food waste. And this is being sponsored by City Harvest, which I'm sure most of you know is a great organization feeding people in need in the city. Eating Better on a Budget is a workshop being taught by a nutritionist, Karen Novo, and she will be doing it on March 28th. It's called Eating Better on a Budget. That's at Uniondale Public Library, and it's being sponsored by Cornell Cooperative Extension. And there's quite a few of these workshops going on at different communities that are that have many community members who are financially challenged and in need of better nutrition. So these events are really great. March 31st, TEDx is having an event at Adelphi University. There still are tickets. It's very reasonable. And this is an all-day event from 9 to 3:30, and they have 12 speakers lined up. And the theme is What Now? And, you know, I've gone to many TEDx events, not at Adelphi, but other ones, and they're always great. Revolution for Truth March. This is a new one that I just heard about. It's in front of the vaccine court, in front of the White House in D.C. And this is a march to to request transparency in vaccinations, the truth about the environmental toxins, the unsafe food, and vaccine risks. And, you know, we all take vaccines and we're told about vaccines as being good for us, but we really need to do the research. Some vaccines might be good for us, but some really might not be good for us, but they're good for business. And we really need to follow the money and see whether we really need to take some of these vaccines that they're pushing on us. Lots of stuff has come out about different vaccines. You know, I would not say all vaccines are bad. I think many of them are life-saving and are really valuable. But the quantity of vaccinations that are pushed on our families and our kids, I think, is getting out of hand. And when you see the money that's involved in these vaccinations, you understand why they're pushing them. And, you know, after a while, very often the downside starts coming out. And one of the things that we've learned about the CDC or the Food and Drug Administration, they actually approve things sometimes before the safety is really known. And then after the fact, it's up to the members of the community to push to try to get it removed off the market. That's a little backwards. I think the European Union and other countries are much better about that kind of thing. They really test things and check for safety first before putting it on the market. That's why GMOs were not even legal there for so long, and finally when they did allow them because of the push of the USA, they actually made the law immediately that they all had to be labeled. And most people in Europe won't buy things that are genetically modified. And as a result, most food companies make the same products that they make for us in the U.S. They make a different batch for the European Union that does not contain any GMOs. So it's really a little infuriating to know that these companies can actually make their products GMO-free, but they don't for the U.S. because it's cheaper to not, and we are so gullible that we just think it's not a problem. We eat it up. So we need to all really, again, take that stand and fight for transparency in our foods. Just Food is a forum on labor across the food system that's taking place up at Harvard Saturday, April 1st, and the same day up in the Boston area is a food tank summit, and that's at Tufts University. Both are great events. I've gone to many of the food tank summits, and they're just wonderful. Movable Feast by Slow Food East End is taking place April 2nd out on Long Island, and this is event that is a fundraiser for the Josh Levine Foundation. And Josh was a farmer out on a farm out in Amagansett, Quail Hill Farm, and there was an accident with a tractor and he lost his life. And so they set up this foundation to support school gardens. And out on the East End, they've been doing amazing things with school gardens, and that's what this event is supporting, the Edible School Garden Program. And so if you feel like going to a wonderful event out in Sag Harbor on April 2nd, you'll be supporting a really good cause. April 3rd, Taste That Jazz at the Carlton. It's an annual fundraiser for the Safe Center on Long Island, and it is going to be a great event with food, wine, beer, spirits, and, of course, jazz and desserts. And so it's at the Carlton Eisenhower Park. There's open seating or reserve seating, so you can check that out. And also there is a farm-to-institution summit taking place up in Massachusetts. If you are working within an institution and want to learn how to connect to local food and farm food and improve the food of your institution, this is definitely an event that you want to go to. There's so many more events. I don't really want to take the time for all of them, but I do want to mention the marches that are coming up so that you can save the dates. There's a march for science in Washington, D.C. on April 22nd, and then the following weekend on April 29th, there's the People's Climate March. Many times these marches also have sister marches in other cities around the country. If you live in different places, check out and see if there's sister marches near you. Usually there's one that takes place in Manhattan as well, for those of us that are local in the New York area. But check those out and go onto my website and see all the different events. There's so many. One other one that I'd like to mention actually is a boot camp for nonprofits. A wonderful organization new to Long Island is the Pro Bono Initiative. And they are having a boot camp up in White Plains for human resources people, for nonprofits that actually have a human resource department. This is a full-day event from 8:30 to 4:30, working with the Jackson Lewis Law Firm, and they are going to go over the ins and outs of the laws, affecting human resource management, and update people on the recent legal developments, and things have changed with laws around internships and things like that. So if you are involved in a nonprofit, this might be a really great workshop for you to take. So I now want to share with you a recipe before I invite my guest on. These are gluten-free vegan tofu meatballs with a soy sesame drizzle. And they're really great, and they can, they have a lot of flexibility. These ones have an Asian flair to them with the garlic and the ginger. You can do the same thing and add oregano and basil and make them tofu meatballs for tomato sauce over pasta. So they have a lot of flexibility. But instead of egg, I'm using flax seeds, and instead of regular flour, I'm using gluten-free flour, actually gluten-free breadcrumbs. So anyway, you start with a pound block of tofu, and you press that between a dish towel to remove some of the water. If you'd like, you can put a little weight on that, and that helps remove the water too. And just let that sit while you get everything else together. 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1 cup of chopped onions, 1 tablespoon chopped garlic, 1 tablespoon chopped ginger, 1 cup of grated carrots, 1 celery stick chopped, 2 cups of chopped baby portobello mushrooms. That's what I had, but of course you could use large portobello mushrooms if that's what you have. 2 tablespoons of flaxseed that I soaked in 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. Just let that sit on the side and get glutinous. And we'll use that, as the egg binder in this recipe. 1/2 cup of fresh parsley, 2 tablespoons tamari, 1 tablespoon of aji marin, which is a sweet rice wine, 1/4 cup of fresh cilantro, 2 cups of fresh spinach, 1 bunch of chives, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/4 cup of sesame seeds, 1/4 cup of gluten-free panko flakes, 2 cups of cooked short grain brown rice, 1 teaspoon salt, and 1/2 teaspoon pepper. And that's for the meatballs. Then the sauce is going to require 1/4 cup of tamari, 1 tablespoon of fresh ground ginger, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar. You could also use maple syrup or honey, 1 teaspoon sesame oil, 1 teaspoon of cornstarch that you mix with 1 teaspoon of water, 1 tablespoon rice wine vinegar, and if you like things a little spicy, which I do, I added 1/4 teaspoon of hot sesame oil. And you can even go up to 1/2 teaspoon if you want it a little spicier. And then I also made a mixture of gluten-free panko flakes. I used 3/4 cup and 3 tablespoons of sesame seeds with a pinch of salt, and I rolled the meatballs in that before baking them. And for garnish, you can also have some sesame seeds and some cilantro or parsley on hand to garnish them at the end of the dish. So you're going to start by sautéing the onions, the carrots, and the celery in some olive oil with the garlic and the ginger. Just sauté those up until they get soft. Then you can add the portobello mushrooms and cook those for a few more minutes. Then you're going to add the mirin and the tamari and cook that for a few more minutes. In a food processor, or you can do it by hand, but I pulsed the parsley and the cilantro until they were really fine. Then I added the tofu, and I pulsed that some more. Then once the vegetables were sautéed, I added that into the food processor and pulsed that so that they were chopped up a little finer. And then I added the raw spinach to that, the 2 cups of raw spinach, and pulsed that till it was all incorporated. I transferred all of that to a mixing bowl, and I added the brown rice, the chopped chives, the soaked flaxseed, the baking powder, the sesame seeds, and the panko flakes, and the salt and pepper. And I mixed that all up. Then in a pie pan, I put the other gluten-free panko flakes with the sesame seeds and salt in a pan, and I started making the meatball shapes. And I made them about an inch in diameter, maybe an inch and a half, I guess, in diameter. Made it into a ball, rolled it into the panko flakes, and I put it on a cookie sheet that I lined with parchment paper and a little olive oil. And I baked these all in an oven, a 375-degree oven, for about 10 to 20 minutes. And halfway through, you know, open the oven, turn them over, because the bottom, the part that's sitting in the olive oil, is what's going to get golden brown. So turn them over so that the other side can get cooked as well. And cook them for a few more minutes so that they're golden brown all the way around. And then you can make the sauce by using just a heavy saucepan. You're going to mix the soy sauce, the rice wine vinegar, the ginger, the brown sugar, and the sesame oil, and mix that up. Let it start getting warm, and then you pour in the cornstarch that you've mixed with the water. And as that warms up, it starts thickening. And that's it. And once it's the thickness that you want, you take it off and you drizzle that on top of the cooked meatballs, or tofu meatballs. And then I garnish them with sesame seeds and some cilantro. And that was it. It made 64 tofu meatballs. So you could freeze them. They freeze really well. So if you're not going to eat them all at one time, since it's a large batch, but believe me, you can easily eat six per person, and they're great, and it's a nice thing to make when you're having a crowd. So now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest today, Acharya Shunya. She is one of the extraordinary teachers living today of the wisdom of Ayurveda. And she has a new book out that is just beautiful, Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom. It's a complete prescription to optimize your health, prevent disease, and live with vitality and joy. And it is my pleasure to introduce Shunya to all of you now. Shunya, are you with me?
I am here. I am with you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Your book is beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I like it too.
I'm sure. I thought maybe we could just start really from the basic. If you could first just give my audience a brief explanation of what Ayurvedic medicine is, that would be a good start.
Yeah, a great place to begin. I think what I really love about Ayurveda is how I can use the very word Ayurveda to define what it is. And Bhavani, Ayurveda literally means the wisdom of life. So it's not just the knowledge of disease or symptoms, but it's the wisdom of life and how to lead it in such a way that we can be healthy. And because life includes food, relationships, our engagement with nature and the cycles with sun, moon, and wind, all of this comes under the purview of Ayurveda. And this wisdom is really old. It's at least 5,000 years older or more. But the beauty of Ayurveda as a system of health and healing is that it was never really interrupted or stopped. We didn't have to kind of retrieve it from memory. It's been an ongoing, uninterrupted, tradition. It's in usage not only in India, Nepal, and those countries, but now it's worldwide, and it's gaining fans every day because people, you know, swear by it that wow, this works, and it not only helps us overcome disease, but it awakens hope and health. So I wrote a book based on that because I've had years and decades of doing exactly that, awakening health and hope, and I felt it was time to write the book.
So this is your first book?
I have contributed different chapters to different books by mm-hmm. different authors, but this is my first complete book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in the book, you talk about the diurnal rhythm as well as the solar and lunar rhythm. And I think, you know,
right.
most people know about solar and lunar, but can you explain what diurnal, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right, rhythm is?
Yeah. So the diurnal rhythm is born from the fact that our Earth, our planet, is orbiting around the sun. And there is a 24-hour rhythm that's born, and there are different facets of dark and light that happen. And it affects all living beings, plants and animals. And it also affects our brain and our gut, our psychology, our physiology. And then there is another rhythm that is born because of the Earth orbiting around the sun, which then translates into a seasonal rhythm. And it, you know, it spans across 12 months typically. And in different hemispheres of the Earth, it plays out differently. But whenever a specific season is upon us, it's not something that we just go and change our wardrobe or, enjoy a brisk walk in cool air or something. But all of that, once again, affects our physiology and our psychology. And ancient seers or sages or beings studied nature and studied the living engagement with nature and all of this epiphenomena, and created what are known as the diurnal rhythms. And also they taught us through Ayurveda how to live in such a way or how to tweak our lifestyle in such a way. No major changes, but simple tweaks, as in what to eat, which may be more seasonal, with spices would, complement a certain season so we don't develop seasonal allergies or seasonal heat rations, or any of those seasonal challenges that attend upon all living beings. So these rhythms are there, and we cannot deny them, and even modern science is now talking about these chronobiological rhythms and how they impact our health and well-being and even our state of consciousness. And Ayurveda, surprisingly, thousands of years ago, created a whole art of living based upon it, and and then when we live by it, it looks like, we come into more and more balance, Bhavani, and our health seems to improve and we feel happier.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the seasons? Like, we're coming into spring now. What kind of changes would one do coming into spring?
Right. So spring is a season where we all experience some sneezing or itching in the eyes or some allergies, but not everybody. I don't, but a lot of people do. And the reason for that is that according to Ayurveda, based upon the diurnal rhythm, after the cold and rain, it suddenly becomes sunny, and the cold and rain from the previous season, or the rain from the previous season and the cold from the previous season, was condensed in our body. And then when it is spring, because of the sunshine and the fierce sunshine that we get, it's not super hot, but it's sharp sunshine in comparison, there is a melting action, and that is why we have more sneezing or phlegm, etc. So to counteract that or to balance that, we are asked to consume more bitter vegetables, so as in those, the greens would be great, and then bitter spices. So some of the bitter spices that Ayurveda talks really in depth about would include, for example, turmeric. So in spring, all of us asked to use turmeric in our stir fries or in our soups in a small amount. Like for one person, I would use like a pinch, like literally what comes between my thumb and forefinger, or maybe 1/8 of a teaspoon. And turmeric can also be swallowed first thing in the morning throughout spring, like maybe 1/4 teaspoon with just warm water. And that itself would be enough to change the microenvironment of the body and saturate it with more of the bitter taste. And also the anti-allergic properties of turmeric, which is a natural spice. And that itself counteracts, spring allergies. And I've had countless cases, because my non-profit foundation in California, we have several charitable clinics. And guess what? We have a lot of people walking in with spring allergies, and this is a very simple home routine from the kitchen that people can do, and they can then let go of antihistamines or the worry of, you know, allergies taking over. So mm-hmm. spring is also a time where we are asked to walk more. And it's not a time for heavy exercising, but definitely more walking and brisk walking and a lot of movement. So we recommend people that different things like exercising and how we fine-tune our recipes with different spices and the choice of our vegetables. Are we going for the more sweet and dense foods like potato or yam or sweet potato, or are we going for the more bitter, airy foods like the green vegetables or the greens rather, like collard, kale, spinach? Which ones do we choose? We can now trust an ancient science that has taught this for thousands of years, and it continues to work and deliver health. So does that help, Bhavani, in a short time? That's all I could explain
yeah.
for now.
Yeah, and you know, taking turmeric every day is also really great. It's an anti-inflammatory, so
absolutely.
You get the added benefit of that as well.
Yes, I mean, this is one of the spices along with neem. These are both two spices that come from the Ayurvedic pharmacopoeia. They have been used for thousands of years in the countries where Ayurveda has been, you know, a tradition. And now it's known a worldwide news. In fact, turmeric is the number one spice that's being used for also anti-HIV and also anti-cancer. So it's just
really?
An all-round great spice to have. And I hope my listeners will look for the organic kind and, you know, and just go into it in a bold way, because there's thousands of years of usage behind such a recommendation, not something that's been tested on mice and we're going to recall after 20 years.
right. And is there a difference between, if you get organic spice, is there a difference in the health benefit whether you get the fresh turmeric or the spice, the dried one?
Actually, and I explain all these things in the book in a narrative manner, but it would be for allergies, any kind of turmeric is fine, but I have found that if we live in a climate which is hot and warm, like in California, I grow a turmeric rhizome, and I plant it in spring, and I can harvest it in fall. And actually, you know, I've just recently planted my turmeric rhizome again. But the benefit of having powder is that you can have it year-round all the
mm-hmm.
time. And also, I think it's for the purpose of swallowing something first thing in the morning during spring, I don't know if I want to chew on a rhizome. I'd just mm-hmm. rather be done with it by swallowing it. And mm-hmm. I just want to reassure everyone that even though it's a bitter, it tastes more like wood more than something really terrible. You're not going to throw up. It's not bad at all. And it can also be tossed in cooking. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, the fresh rhizome seems to work more mm-hmm. on digestion, and it also frees us of toxins at a digestive level, whereas
mm-hmm.
the powdered turmeric that we take first thing in the morning, according to Ayurveda, works deep down at the cellular level, where we want to overcome cancers and we want to get rid of our allergies at a very deep, deep level.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're going to take a couple minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the three doshas, the subtle
sure.
matter states that you talk about in your book, and so many more things. So everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest is Shunya, Acharya Shunya. Be right back.
This is Tony Hendron
and Jeff Chrysler
of the Final Edition Radio Hour
on PRN,
your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.
This is journalist Dave Lindor. I'll be hosting the show This Can't Be Happening each Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM. because we know it is happening. Each week's program will feature some issue that's been getting ignored or misreported, like Social Security, climate change, military spending, or the government's destruction of the Internet. Please join me at This Can't Be Happening on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Stay tuned to PRN, your source for the best in progressive radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And Acharya Shunya is my guest, author of Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom. So, Shunya, can you tell us about the three subtle matter states that you talk about in your book?
And interestingly, the sages described dosha not only as one general intelligent energy in the body, but then they divided it up into three subtypes. And these three subtypes could be, just for our conversation's sake, maybe described as three housekeepers, invisible housekeepers in the body. They do different tasks. They influence our personality. And if they are in imbalance, then they also create symptoms. And once we have knowledge of the doshas, we can then use something like my book, for example, to then know which foods and which lifestyle practices or which yoga postures or how much exercise, etc., will help balance a dosha. So just really quickly, you know, there is the dosha called Vata dosha, V-A-T-A. So I can't really, you know, translate it into anything else. It's a proper noun. But Vata dosha comes from wind, and this dosha helps coordinate all kinds of movement in the body. So from winking of the eye to, you know, movement of esophagus or ejection or ejaculation or elimination or, you know, anything, beating of the heart and even movement of thoughts. All kinds of subtle or gross movement is regulated by this dosha. And when we have it as a dominant dosha in our own personality at birth, it's a constitutional thing, then we too, like the wind, may be somewhat changeable, but we could also be adaptable and flexible. We could also be a person with a lot of new ideas, but we might move quickly, talk quickly, but we might get excited, but we might also forget quickly. All in all, people like who have this dosha dominant in them are considered pretty visionary in one sense, because they are moving and changing, and they are not so much restricted by old ways of thinking or being. But in excess, but if this dosha at a physiological level is in excess, Bhavani, then it can cause pain in the limbs, so our movement becomes challenged. Our thoughts may get speeded up, so we have anxiety, or too many dreams, so we have restlessness. And we could also have gas and flatulence, and, you know, overall general sense of fear can also increase. And this dosha can be balanced, for example, by a warm oil self-massage in the morning before we take a shower, oily, hot, sweet, sour, salty foods. So, you know, and typical, you know, suggestions of what to eat that Ayurveda tells us, which works. And many people thought they had an anxiety disorder or they were having arthritis, but all they did was live this lifestyle, and which ended up balancing Vata dosha, and presto, they felt so much better. And, you know, this is the beauty of Ayurveda. The second dosha, Bhavani, is known as Pitta, P-I-T-T-A, which comes from fire. And just as the name suggests, people with this dosha, you know, everybody... people with this dosha, rather, let me talk about the personality first. They are more fiery in nature, which means not that they're necessarily irritable or angry. that can happen if it's in excess. But in general, it means they're really intelligent. You know how fire transmutates things. So fire will help people digest well. It will help us think well, problem solve, be like a leader. But in excess, once again, it makes us irritable. We can have heartburn. We can have heat in the body, and we might feel like, wow, you know, there's some, I need to cool down in every which way. And when this dosha is functioning well, no problem. We're just like a mean machine, digesting food, digesting ideas and problems, sorting them out. But when it's in excess, we're burning our own bridges, let's say that. And once again, the Ayurveda's lifestyle wisdom will help us know which oil to use, such as coconut oil mixed with roses or marigolds, to apply on our body to calm us, which foods to eat, which are more cooling in their nature than warming, you know, like grapes and, you know, cucumbers and coconut and certain spices like fennel and coriander. So we can add them to our regular cuisine, whatever we eat. We don't have to eat Indian food necessarily, but we can add those spices and we will feel like all our symptoms have calmed down and we are a happy camper again. You know, we're just our natural, brilliant, radiant self, but we're not burning ourselves out. Mm-hmm. And finally, the third dosha bhavani is known as kapha, K-A-P-H-A. Again, a proper noun, but it comes from water, and we, you know, and there is water and there is earth, so it's a very dense and solid kind of a dosha. And what it does is, in a healthy way, it tends to take care of our body structure, our immunity, and even endurance and patience in the mind. So when kapha is in a healthy proportion in the body, it tends to give us physical strength, stamina, and also mental, you know, just dependability. We are just like, we can deal with much more without falling apart. It's just solid strength. But when in excess, the water and earth, they tend to create heaviness, weight gain, water retention, a lot of phlegm in the body, you know, manifesting through chest infections or, you know, frequent phlegm coming out through the nose. And in the mind, it can even lead to excessive grief and even depression. So once again, Ayurveda has a brilliant teaching around what exercise, what foods, and, you know, what lifestyle practices a person can adopt. And presto, they lose weight. You know, their allergies clear up and their mind doesn't feel, you know, weighed down, but rather it has all the benefits of being a mature, you know, strong mind, but without feeling like it's stuck. So I love how the lifestyle teachings, which are universal, we don't have to know our dosha to start living the lifestyle that I talk about. But once we live this lifestyle as per the diurnal rhythm, the promise is that all three doshas get self-balanced. And if there is any remaining imbalance, we can quickly go through a list and see, yeah, I have this symptom going on. So for a short time, I will also follow not only a seasonal diet, but a dosha balancing diet or a dosha balancing fine-tuned practice. And once we have that balance, we can just continue living our normal life. But it's a whole different paradigm from thinking that, you know, I'm sick and there's something wrong with me. And instead, it's just a case of I'm not broken. I just can bring back balance and enjoy my health again.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really fascinating because it's, you know, an ancient tradition and it goes back to food as medicine, you know, but it's not only just food, it's also your lifestyle. And I know you talk about, you know, getting in balance, like, you know, waking up before the sunrise, how that affects your mental, physical, and emotional health. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how does, you know, the food helps balancing, but how does changing those rhythms help to balance one's doshas as well?
You know, all animals, and I understand now that, I mean, I know this through schooling, that plants and animals, you know, they all wake up to greet the sun. And those animals and plants which are more awake at nighttime are a different kind and they work differently. But, you know, most of us, a bulk of us, including us human beings, we are connected to the sun. So as the sun rises, our own consciousness rises within. And if we rise early in the morning, and we might even arise even a little bit earlier before the sun rises, and actually go to a window or go outside if the weather permits and watch the sun rising, like with our own eyes, Bhavani, the sages say that act of watching this beautiful golden orb rise in the dark night actually has the biggest antidepressant effect on the mind. And it also teaches us subtle ways of knowing that light is only the only truth and darkness is an illusion. So it's a spiritual concept. Now, I know I had studied about it growing up in a traditional family in India, but then when I started, you know, suggesting this to the hundreds of people, if not thousands, whom I have talked to and taught by now, who, and of which hundreds more are depressed or sad or carry grief in their heart, and just by this one practice of waking up literally by setting an alarm and then turning their eyes towards the outer sky, it made a huge impact upon them. And later, much later, in the recent decades, we found out about seasonal affective disorders. We found out about melatonin and serotonin and how the happy chemical serotonin is connected to light, melatonin to darkness. So now we have all this science to kind of support what, you know, Ayurveda has been saying. But that's why in this book I spent like such a long time explaining this whole process. And people say it's the most beautiful and uplifting chapter, along with everything else, but they felt empowered by it because we're connecting with that entity, the sun, because of which we are all alive. It's a fact. You know, we can eat all the foods we want. We can have all the lifestyle we want. We can have all the relationships we want. But if it was not for our relationship with the sun as living beings, none of it would be possible. So when we go out there and we open our arms and we experience that sun in our heart, something happens here. So early in the morning, I was looking up some research, and I found that the maximum number of the most important literary achievements that have been done by people were by authors who woke up that time in the morning and caught their ideas, or they meditated, or they wrote, you know, great literature that has literally become like a scripture for the rest of the world. So it was fascinating how we, most of us, sleep through that time. But instead, if we wake up at that time, we would fall asleep by 10 p.m. or something, which is a good time to fall asleep by Ayurveda teachings. And that really is the most healthy sleep cycle. So last night, I went to bed around 9:45, 10, and I had a beautiful sleep, and I woke up around 5:30, just all naturally. And I didn't feel like people had to push me out of my bed. And I go all day, and I feel really good.
Mhm. Wow, that's one thing that I would really have to change, because I get up in the morning, but I probably don't even sleep enough. What do you recommend? Does Ayurvedic medicine talk about how much sleep people are supposed to get?
So I think it's saying about 7 to 8 hours, if I calculate properly. But I would say that. It did not give a number, but it did say that we should go to bed by 10, and then our body will start awakening at a natural time on its own, depending on how much work we need. And Ayurveda doesn't say that if you didn't get enough sleep, you can't sleep an extra hour, but these are the details where I have given around what to do. And in case we have disturbed sleep, then we have to go into the chapter on sleep and then eat those recipes or drink that recipe I have given with cow milk. It can also be made with almond milk, which we know which has nutmeg and a couple of spices in it that really puts us into deep sleep. So these 27 recipes that I've shared are hundreds of years old. They are not recipes that you can walk into an Indian restaurant and order them. And each of the spices is perfectly calculated to bring about therapeutic changes. So we can use some of the suggestions, including food suggestions, to have good sleep. As a result, for example, in my case, I get, you know, I don't always get 8 hours of sleep, but I'm actually doing fine, and I look younger than before, and I feel healthier than before. So I don't know if it's 7 or 8 hours of poor quality sleep versus 6 hours of really dense sleep that's going to make the difference. Mm-hmm. So I open all this knowledge up for people to understand and then take some few steps. I was recently talking to someone who had been sent a book for review a month in advance before its publication so they could write a review for a magazine. And that person has had sleep problems, Bhavani, for 25 years. So she just missed the preface and the intro and dived directly into the sleep chapter and started drinking that recipe and applying warmed oil on the soles of her feet. And I said, no matter what sleep problem you have, go to bed by 9:30 and drink that milk and go to bed. And within 5 days, she was sleeping like a baby is what she said. And she wrote the most glowing review, and, you know, and she's become a friend. You know, she's now reading another chapter. So this is the beauty of Ayurveda, tried and tested.
Yeah, and so many people have problems with sleep. I mean, I'm a very good sleeper, so I don't have that. But when I talk to friends who lie awake for hours trying to go to sleep, I just can't imagine. So that is wonderful to know. That's wonderful to know. Now, you also talked about...
Yeah, because, Bhavani, it's easy to say go to bed by 10. And what if you're just tossing and turning, right? And that is why the lifestyle wisdom comes in that drink this recipe, apply this oil, chant this thing, these words, sing these thoughts. And this comes down from thousands of years, and it works. It was given to us by the same people who created yoga and meditation. So Ayurveda is a sister science of yoga, so we can trust it, try it, and once it works for us, you know, then we can try the next thing. We can cherry pick. We can do one thing at a time, and as it changes our life quality, we can gradually bring in more of that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned a couple of times now about massaging with oil. Can you talk a little bit about that? How does massaging with oil, and are there different oils?
From the Ayurveda lifestyle, you know, plethora of teachings. And typically sesame oil or coconut oil or almond oil, in any combination, though I suggest certain ratios in the book, but those oils could be warmed to a nice, gentle temperature so that we are not burning ourselves. We could use like a tiny crock pot, or we could even heat it underwater by putting the bottle in hot water. And then Ayurveda says, go ahead and apply it. It's not a heavy-duty massage, but apply it with gentle, loving, caressing strokes on your entire body, including your face, and then take a hot shower. So it takes about, you know, 9 to 10 minutes in my morning practice. But that 9 to 10 minutes, I think, buys me 9 hours worth of energy in my day. So I've had people, you know, I work in California in Silicon Valley, and people say, oh, I'm so busy, I have a startup, I have this, I have that, I have kids, I have no time, I have to rush them out to school. And I go, okay, 9 minutes, 7 minutes, just try it, wake up 7 minutes earlier. And when they start doing that, it's like, first of all aches and pains in the body start reducing. They go away very quickly. Next, you just feel this, you know, spur of energy within your body, because according to Ayurveda, this oiling balances Vata dosha. And if our listeners can remember, that dosha is the one that balances all kinds of movement. So it really calms us. We're not like vibrating at a high speed and burning ourselves out. We don't feel exhausted. We feel relaxed. So this self-oiling, especially with these medicinal oils, which have anti-inflammatory effect, has just a remarkable effect. I have the story of one of my students, Leanne Brady, who was suffering from MS when she met me. And she said, you know, I don't have time for all of this. I just need one practice. So I gave her this oiling practice. Within a few months, you know, she ran with it. And then within a few months, when she went to see her neurologist said, wow, your MS is at the best possible ever. What are you doing? And she said, well, I'm eating this Ayurveda diet, you know, and I'm, you know, just oiling this my body. That's all. And then her neurologist invited her to give a lecture on Ayurveda and her practices at her practice, you know. And then this person got so inspired, she went on to study Ayurveda at a professional level at my school. You know, we start with self-care. And, you know, and is now, you know, leading our charitable clinics and venture. So something as simple as applying sesame or coconut oil on our body every day before we shower, not after, and then just showering regularly and wearing clothes and going about can have such a major impact on our body. Could be something our listeners may say, really? But it's been documented, and, you know, and I've even quoted some research around how it led to reduction of blood pressure and all kinds of benefits because this kind of practices are now being studied worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And so you talk about doing it in the morning, but also doing it at night, correct?
For sleep, we only recommend a tiny bit on our toes and then just wearing socks or wiping them off with a hot towel. We are not asking for the entire body. And for those people whose mornings are super busy, we ask that you do it at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's been amazing. I mean, this, you know, trying to incorporate these things, but at the same time, they're, like you said, you can do just one part of it and start slowly and slowly add these different rhythms to your rituals and bring your life more into balance. It's a beautiful imagery, and I think it's very doable. And your book really, it's amazing. It really breaks it down and makes it very doable for anybody to really look at it and, you know, take from it what they feel is appropriate and you know, work, heal themselves. It's really great. So,
yeah,
Acharya,
thank you. Yeah.
Acharya Shanya, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Your book is beautiful. Can you just share, before we finish, can you share with my listeners how they can get in touch with you or about your school in California?
Yeah, they could just go to my website, which is really my name, Acharya Shunya, A-C-H-A-R-Y-A-S-H-U-N-Y-A, acharyashunya.com. Or they could look for Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom. My book is selling everywhere, online and in all the major booksellers. So, yeah, they can find me and information about my school on my website or just look up my name, Acharya Shunya. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Everyone out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.